The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership. Welcome to Porch Talk. My name is Ted Tate, and I'm sitting outside once again on my front porch. And today we are welcoming Duke Dotson to the porch.
Thanks for having me, Ted. Yep. It's a beautiful porch.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. We get our view of the Potomac, and we've gotten a decent spring day, so it's nice to be out here. I was a little worried about the weather, but it turned out all right. I'll start. Duke, obviously, folks know you as the guy who's coming in and doing a project here in Colonial Beach, but let's talk about where are you from.
So I grew up in Roanoke, Virginia.
Okay.
And my dad actually lived in Fredericksburg, not too far away. So I grew up with my mom in Roanoke, but my dad was in Fredericksburg. So I was mostly in Roanoke, but I was in Fredericksburg area quite a bit as well.
Did you discover Colonial Beach that way from visiting Fredericksburg, or how did you find Colonial Beach?
Yes. When I would go visit my dad and my grandfather both love the water, and so we would always find ourselves on some body of water. So my grandfather lived at Lake of the Woods, you know, just west of Fredericksburg for a long time, and then we would go there, and my dad would also bring me to Fairview Beach and to Colonial Beach. Before my dad passed away last year, he actually lived full-time at Fairview Beach, so he sold his house in Fredericksburg. He had four buddies that lived side by side in Fairview Beach.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like this, like a block from the water. You could see the water. And had a golf cart and that whole bit. So I kind of fell in love with the river golf cart lifestyle. And I liked Fairview Beach.
Tim's?
Yeah, we go to Tim's and the other bar and the convenience store. We get ice cream and the kids, you know, love the golf cart life. And so I fell in love with that. And sorry, Eric Nelson.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's listening when this airs. But Colonial Beach, what I love about it is it's just Fairview with a little more to do, is kind of how I would look at it. More restaurants, more potential because of the downtown component. Parallels, Fairview's obviously close, and there's some similarities, but there's just only – we always used to joke, we would go to this bar, we'd go to this bar, we'd get ice cream, we'd come home, because that's all there really was to do, those three places within the town limits. And then what I like about Colonial Beach is a lot of the same similarities as Fairview, but there's just more to do and more potential with the downtown.
And – did you, I'm guessing you visited Colonial Beach all through that period of your, I guess, your childhood, really?
Yeah, from age 5 to age 22, came here quite
right,
a bit.
Right, and then, so you're in Roanoke. I know that now you're in Richmond, so how did that happen?
So I went to Randolph-Macon College, which is just 15 minutes north of Richmond in Ashland, near King's Dominion, its claim to fame. And after college, most of my friends just kind of either were from Richmond or hung around Richmond, so I just kind of never left.
Just kind of fell into it.
I did live in Fredericksburg for 1 year after college, but all my friends were down in Richmond in the fan, and so I moved down there pretty quickly after college.
And what were you doing?
So between eight, I worked for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage in Fredericksburg for a little bit. I worked for Wachovia Securities, which is now Wells Fargo, in Richmond for a little bit. And before I started my business, when I was 27, right before that, I actually played poker for a living. So for 2 years,
oh, really?
I played poker. That's before I had a wife and kids and all that good stuff.
You were willing to not risk averse, as they say.
Correct, yeah. No, I started playing poker in college and fell in love with it. And when I was 25, when I quit my job, I got my MBA from VCU, and I quit my job to play poker for a living. My parents were going to...
So you quit your job with the bank...
Yeah.
...to go play poker full-time.
Yeah, correct.
And I'm just... putting it out there.
Yes.
And so where did you play poker?
So back then you could play online, so I played a lot online. I played local home games, and then sometimes I would travel to like Vegas, Atlantic City, Aruba, Turning Stone, New York, to casinos to play in tournaments and other games there. But honestly, most of what I did was online back then.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you think, I mean, would you call that making a living? Were you making a living?
Yeah, I made a living. I did okay. I didn't break records. I did okay. Looking back, I was young and I loved the game and I studied the game and I was very passionate about like reading and studying and getting better and improving. But I wasn't as disciplined as I should have been, as like setting my schedule and setting rules and game selection and things. Like, as a 41-year-old person now looking back, it's so clear how I should have done it. But at the time, you know, I would say I had the talent, but not the discipline back then to truly exceed.
So, right. If you had the discipline, you would have, what, avoided certain games that really weren't right for you or
yeah, I think I would have, I would have set my schedule like I do now for work. At Sunday, I look at my whole schedule for the whole week as planned.
Almost minute by minute, I suspect.
Sure, yeah. But back then, I would play when I felt like it. I wouldn't play. Nowadays, I wouldn't play tired. I wouldn't play after drinking alcohol. I wouldn't play unless I had a good night's sleep. I wouldn't play unless I worked out before. So you're just mentally fresher.
Mm-hmm.
Game selection, meaning like playing the games. Like you can look at your data and see what games you excel at and what you don't, and you should spend your time playing the games that you excel the most at.
I know that people look at it as gambling and there's a lot of personality stuff involved or whatever, but when you're playing on, especially when you're playing online, there's very little of that. It's statistics, isn't it?
A lot of math and a lot of pattern recognition is the best way to describe it. Just because you can't see the person in front of you online, you can pick up on certain patterns, how mm-hmm. they play certain hands in certain situations. And honestly, those games are just as easy, quote unquote, to read as a live game.
Really?
Because you'll get so many hands in so much faster online. Mm-hmm. The cards are dealt instantly. Decisions are made quickly. You can play 4, 5, 6 games at once as opposed to one game. So you in online poker, you get to the long run faster. Sure, there's certainly variance in the short run, but online you might play 20 to 30 times more hands per day than you would live.
Does that mean you lose 20 times faster?
You get to the long run faster, whatever the long run is, right? So if you're worse than your opponents, you will lose money faster. If you're better than your opponents, you'll win money faster, sure.
Wow. My brother is very big on gambling, but he does it in that sort of way where he looks at all the odds and he looks at everything, and to him, it's a big math exercise.
Sure, yeah.
And it sounds like for you,
some forms of gambling can be beaten, and then some forms of gambling that you can do that. You know, most casino games you cannot do that because no matter how much you know, the odds are still in the casino's favor. But some
right, games but he knows which ones to pick that are to his best advantage of the ones that are. You know what
sure.
I mean? What are like, as I understand it, blackjack has better odds than say roulette. You know.
Sure. You lose your money faster at blackjack than other games if you know what you're doing. Yeah. Yeah.
So you did that for how long?
About 2 years.
Okay.
And then I got engaged. So I was at 27 and got engaged, and me, my wife to be, and my father-in-law to be, all kind of agreed that playing poker for a living wasn't the best way to raise a family, and so.
How did you meet her?
My best friend from college started dating her best friend from college, and we were post college, all living in Richmond, all living in the Fan. And they introduced us, it wasn't a blind date, but kind of like a blind date. And then a couple years later, they got married, and we were in their wedding. And then the next year, we got married, and they were in our wedding.
So, oh wow!
Yeah,
nice.
They were living 6 blocks from us in the Fan.
Okay. So even in Richmond, you had kind of a sort of a tight knit community, because I mean, Colonial sure. Beach is. One of the things we're known for, obviously, is it's a small town and everybody kind of knows everybody. And it sounds like you had a little bit of that even in Richmond, which is a much bigger town.
Yeah. Richmond is a small, big town or a big, small town, depending on how you look at it. But certainly I had my group of friends from college. A lot of them live close together in Richmond, as did my now, who's now my wife, did as well. So sure, yeah, we had a lot of good friends living pretty close there.
And so you decided that poker wasn't the way to go for starting a family. So where'd you go from there?
So during that same time I was playing poker, I started getting interested in real estate. I had bought a couple of rental properties, and was pretty much obsessed with studying real estate investing, just like I was studying poker at the time. So I had purchased 3 single-family rental properties back then, and I was looking for a property manager. And as a kid, I knew that I wanted to. As a kid, I knew I wanted to start a business. I didn't know what. I just knew that somehow.
So you've always been the entrepreneurial type.
Yeah, like the lemonade stand kid, and I started a car wash and detailing business in high school with my friend, and always kind of knew something. I was going to do something like that. I just didn't know what. And so the stars aligned in 2007. Got engaged. I was looking for a property manager. Couldn't find one that I liked. I knew I needed to get out of poker and do something full time. And I said, you know what? There isn't a good property manager in town that would run the business like I would run it. I was like, maybe that's the business I should start. And so that's what I started in 07. It was simply a property management business where we manage single family rental properties for other people.
Mm-hmm. And so that, you first you did it with your properties.
Yep.
And then you worked your way, I guess, friends and whatnot heard that you were doing that, and you offered your services to others?
That's correct, yep. So I decided I wanted to do it full-time, and so started figuring out, like, you know, how can I convince other people to let a 27-year-old kid with no real experience manage their biggest asset? That seems pretty easy, right? So
how did you do that? I mean, are you a good salesman?
Well, I think starting any business as your own first customer, you put yourself in the shoes of the customer, right? So you understand the thing I was looking for a property manager. So I wanted to build that.
So you wanted to be the best property manager you could be for yourself.
Sure. So all the thing, when I was calling people, interviewing property managers to manage my properties, and I couldn't find one I liked, you know, it was about systems, it was about communication, it was about just the general level of courtesy. And so I started building that. I started building a property management company that had the processes in place that would deliver the results that I would want if I was the customer, and I was the customer. So, that's how I started. So starting is one thing, and letting people know about it's another thing. So I started networking like a lunatic, going to real estate investment networking clubs and meeting realtors for coffee. And back then I would say, hey, if you have a client that can't sell their house and they want to rent their house, refer it to me. I'll pay you a referral fee, and then I'll manage the property. Whenever they are ready to sell, I'll send it back to you, and you can sell the house. Remember 07, 08, 09, that's when the market was turning for the worse. So a lot of people were upside down on their house. They bought a house in 05 or 06. By 08, they were upside down.
Mm.
And so if they had to move, a lot of people lost their jobs in Richmond. We lost, I think, I want to say 4 of our 10 largest employers went out of business.
Wow.
In Richmond. I mean, like Land America, Circuit City, there's some others that went out of business back then. So many people lost their jobs in Richmond, had to move to Charlotte or Atlanta or D.C. to get a job, needed to sell their house, couldn't. So we were there saying, okay, we'll rent it for you until you're not upside down anymore, and then you could sell it. So I didn't start the business because timing was perfect, but it happened to be a pretty good time to start a management company because the market started getting flooded with rentals back then because of the crash. Mm.
And I guess in a lot of cases, rentals of people who were, as you say, moving away, going on, doing other things with their lives, didn't really want to be landlords, didn't really want to be mm-hmm. doing that.
Correct.
But circumstances forced them, so you offered a service that kind of took that burden off of them.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then, you know, what got me into the real estate game was buying rentals. And when I started the business, I didn't do any what you call development for several years because I was concentrating really hard on building the property management business. And then once that got to a point where I could hand off some of the day-to-day duties, I kind of got back into the investment development side and did a single family house, and I did a duplex, and then a 6-unit building, and ultimately 118-unit building over the years. So I worked my way.
So you're buying these properties.
Buy, renovate, and sell, or buy, renovate, and hold. Yeah, we were doing that. You know, and you know, a lot of times, development people are always confused. Like we, in any kind of development deal, we will put in some of our own money, but we'll raise money from other investors. So we would have to find the deal, and then find the money, execute the deal, and make sure our investors got a good return.
It's a complicated business.
Sure.
Of the different things that you're doing, and they're different businesses. I mean, mm-hmm. the management is a different business than development,
sure.
which is sort of a different business than flipping, which sure. is what you're also describing.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you like the best?
If I had to pick one, it would be development. Like when I was a kid, we drive around. Like I was always fascinated by real estate developers. Like I would see something being built, and you know, where there was nothing, now there's something. You kind of take it for granted when you're driving down the street. There's buildings everywhere. But, like, somebody had to do that. Somebody had to have an idea. Somebody had a vision. Somebody had to had the wherewithal to find the equity, to find the get the bank loan, to execute the deal, and ultimately sell the product or rent the product or whatever. So I was fascinated as a kid seeing malls being built, for example, or strip malls or big malls or single-family home communities, townhouse communities, the development is what I think about. People always say, whatever you think about when you're driving around, when you don't have to think about anything, but whatever your brain naturally migrates to is what you should do for a living. That's what somebody told me a long time ago, and that's what my brain naturally migrates to, is I can't drive through a neighborhood or a town and not think about how would I make it better, what would I put there, this person should do this. Like, I can't, like, my brain will not turn that off.
So that's an exercise you're doing all the time, whether you want to or not.
Correct.
You're driving through a neighborhood you've never been to before, and you're thinking, wow, I could put a hotel here, or I could.
Yeah, and sometimes it's simple as, hey, I wish that person would paint their sign, or trim the hedges, or tighten up the landscape. Like it's always seeking, like, you know, perfecting. You can't ever perfect a town or a neighborhood or whatever, but it's always about, like, beautifying, protecting, improving. That's what my brain is always doing when it's not being asked to do something else.
And I've noticed, I mean, it seems like your mode of operation isn't just like, I want to see how much money I can get out of this, but what can I do that benefits me but also benefits them, whether it be your investors or the homeowners, just like you were just talking about.
Absolutely. I always joke that I would do it for free, and I would, and I have done it for free. Like, when I've managed property for years to make a living, and then I've done development projects. Some of them I've never made a buck on, but I learned something from it, or I was happy with the result. Obviously, the deal has to make money, or it doesn't work. Like, the bank has to have a certain debt coverage. The investor giving me the money, they need to make money.
Right.
And so, naturally, sure, I would like to make some money in the deal if I'm going to do it for a living. But money is certainly not the primary motivator. Again, the deal has to work,
right,
or nobody wins, or the deal doesn't happen. But I get a tremendous amount of satisfaction at seeing a project go from start to finish, and seeing like the humans interact with the project upon completion is like the coolest thing in the world. When you, like in Richmond, some buildings you walk by and it's a vacant building for 5 years, and all you see is blight and lost opportunity and whatever, and then finally you develop it and there's people going in there to drink coffee or to drink beer or to eat a meal or to live or whatever, and it's an incredibly satisfying feeling to see that.
When you are doing something like this and you have a vision,
mm-hmm,
which I'm sure you have a vision for what you're doing here in Colonial Beach,
mm-hmm,
does the end result, how much does the end result look like your vision, or does it change a lot in the process?
So that's a great question. A lot of times the site plan for phase one is a great example, or a townhouse. It has to change a lot. You have to be adaptive to what you're given. The given meaning the soil, the market, the everything. Like, you have a certain in a certain environment that you inherit, or you can't always do what you want to do because you're zoning or something.
Right.
Else.
I mean, you drive past a block in a street,
yeah,
and you think, I'd love to do this, and then you get into the nitty gritty of it and find out, well, actually, you can't.
Sure. Yeah, that happens all the time, and sometimes you still can with more work and more time. Or, you know,
more money. Always more money.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so I think you always have to be ready to adapt back again, because it does no good to be stubborn and try to get your way, and your way is not possible or not feasible or whatever. That doesn't do anyone any good. You see developers do that all the time, where they're disputing the town or the city or the neighborhood or whatever for months or years to finally get what they want. It shouldn't be that hard, because you shouldn't want what you want. You should want what the town wants or the neighborhood wants, or there's some architect
what the market wants.
What the market wants, yeah. It's what we're building in Colonial Beach. Sure, it's our plan, but that plan was dictated by the market, by the people, the citizens, like, you know, the government of Columbia, you know, talking to all of those people, like, what do you wish was here, you know?
Right.
And that's what you should develop. There's some architect, I don't know which one said it, but something about how a house shouldn't be on the land, it should be of the land. Are you familiar with that quote?
No, I'm not, but it sounds sort of like something Frank Lloyd Wright would say.
And it might be him. So I'll Google it, so next time I sound more intelligent when I'm quoting that. But that's the same thing with development. Like the plan's already there. I'm just the facilitator of it, in a way. You know what I mean?
Okay. You envision yourself as a steward.
Sure. Sure, yeah.
Of the land or the project or whatever, sure, kind of guiding it to its completion.
Sure.
Well, another quote I've always heard is, find a job you love and never work a day in your life. It sounds like you've done that.
Yeah, and then there were some hard days, don't get me wrong. There's some days that everything doesn't go your way. But yeah, Warren Buffett always said, there's a book called Tap Dancing to Work, and that's how he always felt.
What does that mean?
You're driving to work, you're just excited to get there because you're excited to do what you do for a living. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if Warren Buffett said it, we know it's a guide to success.
Well, I've had jobs where on Sunday, I always used to call it Sunday dread. Now the young kids now call it Sunday scaries, where you're so worried and distressed and anxious about starting the work week that you literally kind of feel nauseous and sick. Oh. And I haven't had that in, you know, 13 plus years. So, yeah, if that ever comes, then I'll know in the long run line of work. But until
then. Time to go.
Sure.
Yeah. So you got a job you love, but surely there must be other things. What do you have, hobbies or other interests that you spend what little free time you have on?
Yeah, I've got a great wife and two kids, and they keep me busy with
How old are your kids?
6 and 10.
Okay.
I play tennis. I play golf. I try to mix in a little poker here and there, but I don't play a lot of poker these days. I would like to.
Do you still win?
No, not as much. No, I'm rusty. I'm okay. Very rusty compared to how I used to play. But that's what I'm, you know, when I'm not working, it's usually kids, tennis, golf.
Do your kid, you do a lot of the taking kids to sports and all that sort of stuff?
It's funny, my 10-year-old doesn't like sports at all. He hates them.
Okay.
And so he doesn't, you know, do any team sports. My 6-year-old, special needs, he loves sports, but he can't quite do the team sport thing. So I do a lot of stuff with him. Putting, you know, like one of the reasons we're going to putting green on the phase 1 townhouses is so he can hang out and putt. He's obsessed with golf and other sports, but so yeah, a lot of stuff with him. We don't have the typical Saturday Sundays like a lot of my peers do with kids, because, you know, for different reasons they don't play team sports.
Okay. I didn't know there was going to be a putting green. When do you break ground on phase 1?
We close on the land in May, so a month, and then site work for like 2 months. That's moving dirt around and putting in utilities and all that, you know, underground stuff. And then we'll go vertical starting August.
Okay, so late summer is really when people will see stuff.
Correct. They'll see some dirt moving around in May and June. And then, you know, August is when they'll probably start going vertical. And then hope to be done around end of the year.
So that means July is like foundations and stuff?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's moving right along.
It is, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it's all kinds of challenges out there in the marketplace because of construction costs. Like it's there's always something in development right now. You probably hear about lumber pricing. Even if you're not in real estate, you hear about lumber pricing.
Oh, I've heard about all the construction pricing and some materials just not being available.
Yeah.
I went to buy new batteries for my golf cart.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, "Well, you better hurry because everybody's running out." And he even said, "You know, I can't get you these, but I can get you those that are more expensive." And I was like, "All right, I guess I buy the more expensive batteries."
COVID affected the supply chain. Like I don't know the extent of the whole Suez Canal thing, but things like that, you know, throw something off for a few weeks, and then that affects pricing.
So how is that affecting you specifically?
That when I suggested, you know, not every day is easy, the construction costs are a major concern for any construction project. We're working our way through it, but that's one reason we've changed the site plan several times to minimize costs wherever we can, but not sacrifice the integrity of the product, which is a challenge. So,
or maybe find other sources for materials?
Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
And then lumber, you know, by the time we actually go to buy it, hopefully it'll come down. I can't imagine it being this high for that long, but it's almost double, you know, what it was a year ago.
No, I've definitely heard about that. And I was thinking of doing a bit of a garage project here at my house. And, you know, then I heard about the prices and I was like, it can wait. I don't need it right now.
And it adds like $10,000 of cost per townhouse, just lumber, just that one product has $10,000 of cost.
Right, and everything else has gone up too, as I understand. It's not just lumber, but it is, lumber's a big piece of it.
It is. I mean, for the most part, it's gone up in some markets like 50 to 70% year over year. And since we started like 6 months ago really designing these townhouses, it's gone up like 20% just in 6 months.
Wow. Do you think you're going to have to adjust your pricing? I mean...
See, the thing is, like, the market doesn't always, when someone's buying the townhouse, they don't care how much it costs to build it.
Right. Yeah. True.
Now, does that
trickle? They have a number in mind, whether it's from their bank or whatever.
Well, the market is the market, right? The market will bear what the market will bear. But now, sometimes the cost will trickle into sales price because, for one example, less stuff gets built. The construction prices jump up because things less of it gets built, there's less of it, so there's more of more demand than there is supply, and so maybe the prices go up a little, you know, but they don't always go up at the same time,
right?
Which makes, I mean, that's why development is risky, that's why development's hard, that's why not everybody wants to do it, because it's a lot of headaches, and you can only control about 70% of what goes on, and 30% is completely out of your control.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people daydream about, oh, wouldn't it be fun to do that, And then you get into the reality of it, and it's, you know, it's not all fun and games, and it's not all profits, you know. Some people lose their shirts doing it's what you do.
Tremendous risk, yeah.
Yeah. So you went from one kind of gambling to another.
Sure. And there are similarities between poker and real estate development or running a business of any kind. Is in poker, there's tons of variance in the short run, and you can't control what happens. You can only control the decisions you make, right? I choose to call, I choose to fold, and then you have to
live. I think that's life.
Sure, yeah. But real estate development's a great example, is you can control certain aspects of it, and then sometimes you're at the mercy of the real estate gods, and then sometimes it goes great, sometimes it doesn't go so great, but you can only control what you can control.
And hopefully learn from your mistakes.
Sure.
Wow, we've spent a lot of time talking. I knew we'd talk about your business just because it's so much of your life. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you like to people to know about you personally, or I mean, again, like, preferably not business, but if that's what you want to talk about, that's fine.
I think you covered a lot of it. I just would, since we're talking to Colonial Beach, I'd like to just thank everyone at Colonial Beach that we've met, whether it's the town government or citizens of any kind, or people that live here full time, people that visit here a lot. Everyone, we've gotten so many ideas from people contributing ideas. And I'm so appreciative of all the ideas we've been given, but also just the support we've been given from a lot of different people here. So I just want to say thank you for that.
Do you feel, I know that there are always naysayers, mm-hmm. and there are, you know, always people who want things to move forward, and there are always people mm-hmm. who want things to just never change at all.
Mm-hmm.
How have your encounters been with the folks who kind of don't want change and don't like, you know, there's, yeah. like I said, there's some people just will always say no.
Yeah, you have that in every, we call them NIMBY, not in my backyard, whatever it is, folks in real estate development everywhere. I'll say this, we've certainly at the beginning, when we started talking about it, you could just follow the chatter on Facebook, and there was a lot of just fear, you know, fear of the unknown, right? And I think that's natural in any market.
And I think a lot of, oh, we've seen this before, he'll be gone in 6 months.
Yes, and then that was the other dynamic, because of the track record of developers in town, mm-hmm. that there was working uphill against that. But since then, I think we've tried our best to engage with folks, and we've tried to keep an open dialogue, and they can email us, they can call us, they can, anything they do on Facebook, we respond to. And so I've been incredibly, like, just appreciative of just the, it's been mostly good, like, honestly, like, I'm not just saying that because, like, it's been, I would say, 92% good, 8% negative of all the interactions we've had, which I think, again, I think it goes back to, like, trying to just listen to people and understand what people actually want.
And you have been very engaged, I have to say, and I don't think people expect a developer to do that. They expect mm-hmm. a developer to show up with his bulldozer and do his thing, you know, and yeah. I think that a lot of people are swayed by the idea that, well, no, he's not just bulldozing us, he's asking us what we want, you know, and moving forward from there. You're very engaged in the project. As I understand it, you're going to be at least living here at least part-time as the project gets rolling.
Correct.
You and your wife are going to move here
May through August. We're renting a house up here, and okay. we'll be up here, my guess is, like, 60-70% of the time we'll be up here, and we'll still be, you know, I'll be working from here some and back originally right. some.
And yeah, yeah, obviously you've got other projects and other things going on, mm-hmm. but with today's internet, you can do a lot of that from anywhere.
That's why not do it from here, so you can see the river, right?
I do.
I'm jealous.
I sit on this porch, and my Wi-Fi reaches out here, and I do my work sometimes. Absolutely.
Well, I am jealous, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I wish you all the luck in the world, and hope you do get that view. I know you're gonna end up buying one of those townhouses that you're building as well.
Correct.
You'll have that river view, won't you?
Yep. That's correct. We're going to get ones with a rooftop deck so we can see the bay and see the river. And yeah, I'm excited. My wife and kids are excited, so I can't wait.
Great. Well, Duke Dotson, thank you very much for coming out to the front porch.
Thanks for having me. It's a great front porch. I hope to have more of these porch talks, so thank you.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Thanks.
If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership.